I'm ready to do the time warp with time lords and in an old timey time machine full of time things.
Static.
While we read Time magazine.
That's maddening.
This is a weird.
I don't know what we're doing. You're just mad because your hat doesn't have a clock in it.
A little.
Yeah. I don't have a hat, everybody. I wish it did. I wish I had a hat that had a clock in it.
Let's fry this turkey.
All right, y'all ready for this?
Chapter 25, yes. Relationships.
Dude, you can't convince me that you have any personal relationships at this point. You don't know how people work.
The old man rocked some more and smiled at me.
You're alone much of the time.
He was right. I enjoyed being alone. I had friends, but I was always happy to get back home. How do you know that? I asked.
Know what? That he was happy to go home?
No, that he's alone much of the time.
Oh.
Well, his reasoning. Your pupils widen when I talk about ideas. They do. There are two types of people in the world, my young friend. One type is people-oriented. When they make conversation, it is about people. What people are doing, what someone said, how someone feels. The other group is idea-oriented. When they make conversation, they talk about ideas and concepts and objects. I'm sorry.
That's stupid.
I know. I must be an idea person.
Yes, and it causes trouble in your personal life, but you don't realize how.
It's just him talking about himself at this point.
It sounds like it.
See, I'm an ideas guy. I come up with ideas all the time.
It takes ideas guys like me to fire 20% of their staff.
He's an ideas man. I'll give him that, you know. He'll have four ideas a day. Most of them will be shit ideas. But even now and then he surprises you with a real gem.
Like whale watching.
Nah, that's one of the shit ones.
That's rather presumptuous of you. What makes you think I have trouble in my personal life? I had to admit he was right. Everyone has an imperfect personal life. But for me, that imperfection was almost a defining principle. He continued,
idea people like you are boring, even to other idea people.
Hey, I'm insulted, I said, not really feeling so. I'll admit I'm not really the life of any party. Whenever I try to inject something interesting into a conversation, everyone gets quiet until someone changes the topic. I think I'm pretty interesting, but no one else does. All the popular people seem to babble about nothing, but I usually have something interesting to say. You'd think people would like that. comments.
I should feel bad for him, but I don't. Yeah, man, there's a...
Well, you got to hear him pat himself on the back and be like, there.
Well, no, I love this, though, because it's literally like him just showing up and like a bunch of people are talking about like Star Wars. And he's like, well, I think Star Trek's better personally. And like, here's the reason why. And everybody looks at him.
He's just monologuing.
Yeah. And like one of them's wearing a Star Trek shirt. And they're like, yeah, but we were talking about Star Wars, dude.
You're just not logical like me. You're not an ideas person.
Yeah, you just don't get it. It's like, no, I get it. I love Star Trek.
Well, and here's the thing. It's also the reason he's so lonely and people don't like him is because he's so much smarter than them.
The reason girls don't want to sleep with him is because they're a bunch of stuck-up bitches. And they're
Exactly.
He's a nice guy, damn it.
He is a very nice guy.
He's a very nice guy, and they just want guys to treat him like crap.
Exactly.
Actually, the popular people only seem to be babbling, he countered. In fact, they talk about a topic that everyone cares about. They talk about people. When a person talks about people, it is personal to everyone who listens.
Oh, so that's it? That's the only reason they're popular is because they talk about people?
You'll automatically relate the story to yourself, thinking how you would react in that person's situation, how your life has parallels. On the other hand, if you tell a story about a new type of tool you found at the hardware store, no one can relate to the tool on a personal level. It is just an object, no matter how useful or novel.
I was going to say, it depends on what it is. Like, if they're like, hey, check this thing out, and it's like a grappling hook that also opens your beer and stuff, I'm sure everybody'd be like, wow, that's really cool. Where'd you get that?
Also, yeah. Also, as like, just like, as a queer programmer, like, you know, with a bunch of, like, I have queer friends and, like, you know, all sorts of friends, but I'm also like a programmer. There's no... I don't know what he's talking about, ideas versus people. Well, I do actually. It's that he's just talking to, he's saying that he doesn't get people, so he must be an ideas guy.
Well,
it's sad.
It's a binary choice, you see. He can only care about things or people. So he chose to care about things and the things he could acquire. He is pathetic.
Okay, so how do I become more interesting? If I gave you advice, would you follow it? Maybe. It depends on the advice. No, you wouldn't follow my advice. No one has ever followed the advice of another person. Now you're just being disagreeable, I said. Obviously, people follow advice all the time. That's not a delusion. People think they follow advice, but they don't. Humans are only capable of receiving information. They create their own advice. If you seek to influence someone, don't waste time giving advice. You can only change what people know, not what they do. That's just advice with extra step.
What the fuck is he talking about?
Like, oh, this is some of that, like, hypnosis bullshit, I bet.
Yeah, because, like, me, I'm thinking about advice people have given me before. Like, one thing is, you shouldn't eat food if it's, like, been in your fridge forever. That was advice. That wasn't, you know, information. That was advice.
Isn't advice technically information? I mean, information is just any content, right?
Yes. Yes. Me telling you what color the sky is information. You don't get to choose to do with that.
Us telling Gendo that he needs to hug his kid is advice, but it's information as
well. It's also information as well.
Okay, then, can you give me some information that would help my personal life?
Perhaps,
he said, clenching his red plaid blanket tighter around his tiny body.
What topic interests you more than any other?
Myself, I guess, I confess.
Of course it is.
Of course it is.
No,
yeah.
He's not a person, except when it comes to himself.
Yes, that is the essence of being human. Any person you meet at a party will be interested in his own life above all other topics. Your awkward silences can be solved by asking simple questions about the person's life.
I like how he sees, like, people connecting, and he's like, ah, so people like talking about themselves.
I mean, I can kind of get, because, like...
It's such a cynical, like, depressed view.
It is, because it's like, yeah, if I'm watching a TV show and I want to talk about it, I guess that's because it's affecting my life. But it's also, you know, I want other people to watch the show because I think they might like it. Or something like that. Like, it's not like a selfish reasoning.
No, you want to make them into you.
I know. I want to make them into me.
That would be totally phony, I said. First of all, it would be like interrogating him. Secondly, I couldn't possibly pretend to be interested in the answers. If he turns out to be some shoe salesman living with his mother in Albany, my eyes will glaze over.
It would seem phony to you while you ask the questions, but it would not seem that way to the stranger. Damn, it is an unexpected gift, an opportunity to enjoy one of life's greatest pleasures.
Talking about oneself.
He would become more animated and would instantly begin to like you. You would seem to be a brilliant and talented conversationalist. And even if your only contribution was asking questions and listening, you would have solved the stranger's fear of an awkward silence. For that, he will be grateful.
This is what a crazy person says about having conversations.
Oh, yeah. No, Scott Adams doesn't know how to person.
Yeah, this is what a crazy person says.
Yeah, like, I don't... Like, clearly he doesn't have friends or people who can check in on him, but somebody should check in on him.
That's not the stranger's problem, but I have to listen to this guy drone on about himself. The cure is worse than the disease.
See, I think that somebody should just leave a bottle of whiskey, a bag of cocaine, and a gun with him. And just what happens. Let nature take its course.
The God sort him out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just let God sort it out.
No, we're not advising that. Your questions to the stranger are only the starting points. From then, you can steer him towards the thing you care most about, yourself. Wouldn't he want to talk about himself instead of me?
When you find out how others deal with their situations, it is automatically relevant to you, he said. There will always be parallels in your life. Find out what you and he have in common, then ask how he likes it, how he deals with it, and if he has any clever solutions for it. Perhaps you both have long commutes, or you both have mothers who call too often, or you both ski. Find that point of common interest, and you will both be talking about yourself to the delight of the other.
What about sharing my opinions on important things? I asked. I'm always getting into debates with people.
Oh my god! Oh my god! I hate him so much! I always end up getting into debates with people. We talk about abortion at parties and then everybody just kind of walks away.
It seems like I always have more thought out view of things and I feel like I have a responsibility to set people straight. Sometimes, though, I wish I could just shut up. When you hear the crazy views that some people have, actually most people, how can you just let it slide?
Have you ever been in traffic behind someone who doesn't move when the light turns green? So you honk your horn, then you realize the car is stalled and there's nothing the driver could have done?
Yeah, I've honked. It's embarrassing, I said.
Everybody does it. Fuck you.
Most disagreements are like my example. Two people have different information, but they think the root of their disagreement is that the other person has bad judgment or bad manners or bad values. In fact, most people would share your opinions if they had the same information. If you spend your time arguing about the faultiness of other people's opinions, you waste your time and theirs. The only thing that could be useful is examining the differences in your assumptions and adding to each other's information. Sometimes that is enough to make viewpoints converge over time.
Hey, if you teach me how to get along with women, I could sure use that.
Oh, that is just exactly where I was waiting for him to get to.
I mean, it's 2001. Of course that's gonna...
It's gonna be great.
Yeah, it's gonna make its way in here.
I could tell you some things.
I'll take whatever help I can get.
I read the game.
Women like it when you talk down to them.
Oh, boy.
I'm sorry.
Oh, boy.
I feel like that's where this is going to go.
Women believe that men are, in a sense, defective versions of women, he began. Men believe that women are defective versions of men. Both genders are trapped in a delusion that their personal viewpoints are universal. That viewpoint, that each gender is a defective version of the other, is the root of all misunderstandings. How does that help me? I asked. Women define themselves by their relationship, and men define themselves by whom they are helping. Women believe value is created by sacrifice. If you're willing to give up your favorite activities to be with her, she will trust you. If being with her is too easy for you, she will not trust you. You can accomplish your sacrifices symbolically at first by leaving work early to buy flowers, canceling your softball game to make a date, that sort of thing.
Why does it seem like the rich and famous guys get all the women, I asked.
Look, first off, I have never thought that. A woman is an incomplete... What?
A defective dude.
Yeah, I've never thought that a woman is a defective man.
I never thought I could hear dumber ideas on gender than Aristotle's.
I never thought I could hear dumber ideas than...
Who taught him about relationships? Robert Durst? I mean, God!
Yes. Oh my... I'm so confused by this. This is not how you're supposed to view other people.
Like, I'm surprised there isn't a documentary about Scott Adams. It's like the Jinx.
Sorry, let's hear about why rich and famous guys have all the pussy.
Partly because Robert Durst.
Partly because rich and famous. No.
Partly because the rich and famous are capable of making larger sacrifices. The average man might be sacrificing a night of television to be with a woman. The rich and famous man could be sacrificing a week in Tahiti. There is much to be said about the attraction of power and confidence exuded by a rich and powerful man, but capacity for sacrifice is the most important thing.
What do men value? I asked.
Look, I'm just going to say I don't view spending a week in Tahiti as a sacrifice.
Yeah, but also, like, so what? If I'm, like, a McDonald's fry cook and I go up to some woman who's, like, married to some guy and it's like, oh, he can sacrifice a week in Tahiti and I just whack my right thumb off, I win?
Well, I don't know.
Yes, but you prove that you're willing to sacrifice more.
What's the market value for a thumb?
Actually, quite a bit.
Yeah, more than a week at, or week in Tahiti,
yeah,
probably.
More than a week in Tahiti, probably. I don't think it's
more than $300. So $300 is going right for an arm.
I think a thumb is personally more important than fucking a week in Tahiti.
Oh, I know, but he transactionalizes everything.
Oh, I know, and I forgot that, like, in this country, if you lose an arm, your employer owes you like $300.
Okay, hang on. $35,000 for a thumb.
Look, it must be a different... Weird.
The value of your body parts from Market Watch.
Yeah. So a thumb is $35,000.
How is an arm less than a thumb?
Well, let me see what it says for arm.
I think those people just worked for a company that was screwing them.
Yeah. It also might be an old list of body part price values that I looked at.
Yeah, because this is an assembly line worker who loses a finger might receive $18,000.
Huh.
So you must be going off of old numbers.
Yeah, because I know that company where those people in Georgia were like chopping off hands and stuff. Yeah, they were getting like $500 a limb. And it was
arm is at $124,000.
Ooh, never mind then.
So your fourth finger is the lowest at $6,000. So I think that's your that is your pinky.
Yeah, it's your pinky.
Which honestly, I think a pinky is more valuable than a ring finger. Ring finger's at $10,000, and any toe other than a big toe is at $6,400. Big toe's at $15,000.
Well, shit, I could give a little toe to a company. I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, but the
your whole foot will get you $82,000.
Yeah, I don't want to lose my foot.
I want this dumb like romance story of the fry cook who sacrificed all of his fingers for like 10. It'll be called 10 dates.
Well, yeah,
10 digits, 10 dates.
Yeah, your thumb is the most. That's $35,000. Your first finger's $18,400. Second finger's $12,000. Third finger's $10,000, and then your fourth finger's $6,000.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it just takes a whole hand to beat a week in Tahiti for a millionaire, probably.
But if you lose a hand all at once, it's $97,000.
I think I'd go with all the fingers, and then I'd do the hand. That way, it's like, you know, I get my max income.
Exactly. You want to fight God, you live like early Kyler.
Kyler, baby. Yeah, you just start chopping off parts of your body and like getting the money for it.
Yeah, as much as it pains me to do this, here is a check for $600 per hour reluctant but government mandated death and dismemberment policy.
Also, y'all really ought to put some guardrails on that paper shredder now. And you got yourself a serious OSHA problem with that pencil sharpener. Go on now. Write them checks.
Oh, I done gained the damn system, baby!
What do men value? I asked.
Men believe value is created by accomplishment, and they have objectives for the women in their lives. If a woman meets the objectives, he assumes she loves him. If she fails to meet the objectives, he will assume she does not love him. The man assumes that if the woman loved him, she would have tried harder, and he always believes his objectives for her are reasonable!
Yeah, I mean, me and Sophia get this. I mean, we're both trans feminine, but we're non-binary. And, I mean, we're constantly just, like, sacrificing things and making unreasonable demands of one another. And that's pretty much what we do all the time. And it's a healthy relationship. We only get into a physical altercation about twice a week.
And oh, my God, imagine. Oh, my God.
And when I'm in a relationship, I wear a big cloak and I grow my beard really long and I have a staff. And I send my partner off on objectives to grab me things.
And you reward her with armor.
Exactly. Sometimes gold coins.
This is psychotic.
What objectives? The objectives are different for each man.
She has to bring me the orb of light.
Men rarely share these objectives because doing so is a recipe for disaster. No woman would tolerate being given a set of goals.
So what should a guy do if the woman in his life doesn't meet those secret objectives? How can he get her to change?
He should murder her.
He can't. I mean, he can't. He replied, "People don't change to meet the objectives of other people. Men can be molded in small ways, clothing and haircuts and manners, because those things are not important to most men. Women can't be changed at all." I'm not hearing anything helpful here. The best you can hope for in a relationship is to find someone whose flaws are the sort you don't mind. It's futile to look for someone who has no flaws, or someone who is capable of a significant change. That sort of person exists only in our imaginations.
If you like the same food or sex angles, you're compatible.
I do the exact
opposite. I'd make everyone say the worst thing about themselves, the most embarrassing, darkest secret. If the other person can stomach you for another second, then maybe you have a chance together. Maybe.
What? That is the least romantic.
I want to do it.
Let's do it.
I'm game.
No.
I'll go first. Hi there. I'm part of a secret society. We hunt men for sport.
Hello? I've had a yeast infection for 10 years!
Stop! Oh, Gina, no! Ugh.
Yeah, the thing is, though, I'm loving about hearing this. I'm like, wow, he managed to be misogynistic. He managed to be also, like, weirdly, like, prejudiced. And, like, a bunch of other stuff all in one statement. It was nice.
And also, it was still incoherent psychobabble.
Yeah, it was also still incoherent as shit.
Let's say I find the woman whose flaws I don't mind, I said. The hard part is keeping her. I haven't had much luck in that department. Scott Adams,
well, you got to break her legs so she doesn't run.
Exactly. Like, dude, you having problems with ladies? I would never have imagined it.
Yeah. Yeah, the trick is you got to wear a cast. That way you get them to trust you.
Exactly. And then if you're real quick with the implant, they'll never know that you're tracking them.
On Christmas Day in 2019, Adams announced on his podcast that he was engaged to Christina Basham and later revealed that they had married on July 11, 2020. Basham, a model and baker, has two daughters and is a vice president at Wenhub. On March 10, 2022, Adams announced on his YouTube podcast that he and Basham were getting divorced.
Yeah, that tracks.
Yeah, that tracks.
That tracks.
Anyway,
a woman could stand him for about 2 years before it became completely unbearable.
A woman needs to be told that you would sacrifice anything for her. A man needs to be told that he is being useful. When a man or woman strays from that formula, the other loses trust. When trust is lost, communication falls apart.
I don't think you need to trust someone to communicate. I can talk to someone I distrust as easily as someone I trust.
All right, Jacob, are you willing to emasculate yourself in front of me and Sophia right now?
How?
No, cutting off...
Yeah,
is that what you mean?
Oh. Yeah, cut off your junk.
No, I'm not willing to do that.
Okay, so Jacob's not willing to make that sacrifice, but I'm still going to let you know that you're useful.
Good. Good.
I don't know what he's talking about. Anyway.
The man is fucking clearly insane and has severe emotional and mental problems.
Without trust, you can communicate only trivial things. If you try to communicate something important without a foundation of trust, you'll be suspected of having a secret agenda. Your words will be analyzed for hidden meaning, and your simple message will be clouded by suspicions.
I guess I can see that. How can it be more trusted?
Lie.
No, you're kidding, right? I asked.
You should lie about your talents and accomplishments, describing your victories in dismissive terms as if they were the result of luck. And you should exaggerate your flaws.
Step 3. Brag. Not lying, but close. Make up a story about how you single-handedly murdered a wild animal. Your story is going to release a hormone deep inside her body called insatia. It makes women ovulate for sex.
Interesting.
And you should exaggerate your flaws, what he said. Why in the world would I want to tell people I was a failure and an idiot? Isn't it better to be honest?
Honesty is like food. Both are necessary, but too much of either creates discomfort. When you downplay your accomplishments, you make people feel better about their own accomplishments. It is dishonest, but it is kind. This is good stuff. What other tips do you have? You think casual conversation is a waste of time? Sure, unless I have something to say. I don't know how people can blab about nothing. Your problem is that you view conversation as a way to exchange information, he said. That's what it is, I said, thinking I was pointing out the obvious. Conversation is more than the sum of the words. It is also a way of signaling the importance of another person by showing your willingness to give that person your rarest resource, time. It is a way of conveying respect. Conversation reminds us that we are part of a greater whole, connected in some way that transcends duty or bloodline or commerce. Conversation can be many things, but it can never be useless.
For the next few hours, the old man revealed more of his ingredients for successful social living. Express gratitude. Give more than is expected. Speak optimistically. Touch people. Remember names.
Touch people?
Yeah, you gotta just reach out and touch them.
Don't confuse flexibility with weakness. Don't judge people by their mistakes. Rather, judge them by how they respond to their mistakes. Remember that your physical appearance is for the benefit of others. Attend to your own basic needs first. Otherwise, you will not be useful to anyone else. I didn't know if I could incorporate these ingredients into my life, but it seemed possible.
If you just clean your bedrooms...
All right, ready?
Chapter 26, Affirmations.
I've heard of something called affirmations, I said, taking the opportunity to spelunk another tunnel in old man's brain. You write down, he's so gross the way he says shit.
Yeah, I know, it's so gross the way he says things.
You write down your goals, you write down your goals 15 times a day, and then somehow they become true as by magic. I know people who swear by it. Does it really work?
The answer is complicated.
I have time, I said.
People who use affirmations know what they want and are willing to work for it. Otherwise, they would not have the enthusiasm to write down their goals 15 times every day. It should be no surprise that they have more success than the average person.
Because they work harder?
Because they know what they want, he said. The ability to work hard and make sacrifices comes naturally to those who know exactly what they want. Most people believe they have goals when, in fact, they only have wishes. They might tell you their goal is to get rich without working hard, without making sacrifices or taking risks. That is not a goal. It is a fantasy. Such people are unlikely to write affirmations daily because it would be too much effort, and they are unlikely to be successful in any big way.
So the affirmations are unnecessary?
They have a purpose. Writing your goals every day gives you a higher level of focus. It tunes your mind to better recognize opportunities in your environment.
What do you mean by tuning your mind?
Have you ever had the experience where you hear a strange word for the first time, and then soon afterward you hear the same word again?
That happens all the time, I said. It's freaky. It's as if hearing a word for the first time makes it appear everywhere, like fescue. I had never heard of the word until I saw it on a package of grass seed in the store last week. That night I was at a party and some guy used the word. I'm fairly sure I'd never heard that word before in my entire life. Then I hear it twice in a matter of hours. What are the odds of that? And last night I was at my neighbor's house down the street shooting some pool on his new table. I asked him if he ever played a game called foosball. It's that table game where he...
Have you ever played foosball, sir? My boy, have you ever played this wonderful game called foosball?
Miniaturized soccer players they are, and you spin them around and they hit each other, and sometimes they'll break off pieces and they'll fly in your face.
God's wounds.
All right. It's that table game where you use handles connected to your soccer players and try to kick a wooden ball into the other guy's goal. His face said that he didn't need to know the details of foosball table design. Anyway, I continued, we talked about foosball for 20 minutes, how he played it in college but hadn't seen a foosball table in years. I can't remember the last time I uttered the word foosball. 15 minutes later, I'm walking home and something catches my eye in an upstairs window of a neighbor's house. I'll be darned if it wasn't a bunch of kids playing foosball. I've gone past the house 1,000 times and never seen that foosball table in the window before.
Your brain can only process a tiny portion of your environment, he said.
Well, you see, there's a logical explanation, and that is the universe is actually a simulation only for him. He's special.
He's like Truman from The Truman Show.
Exactly, but it's the whole universe. Him and Andrew Tate are fighting their way out of the Matrix.
Your brain can only process a tiny portion of your environment, he said. You risk being overwhelmed by the volume of information that bombards you every waking moment. Your brain compensates by filtering out the 99.9% of your environment that doesn't matter to you. When you took notice of the word fescue for the first time and rolled it around in your head, your mind tuned itself to the word. That's why you heard it again so soon.
It's still a coincidence. I don't think people are saying fescue around me every day.
Yes, probability is still involved. But fescue and foosball were only a few of the unusual words and ideas that tuned your brain to this week. The others didn't cross your path again, so you took no notice of their absence. When you consider all the coincidences that are possible, it is not surprising that you experience a few every day. A person who does affirmations takes mental tuning to a higher level. The process of concentrating on the goal every day greatly increases the likelihood of noticing an opportunity in the environment. The coincidence will create the illusion that writing down the goal causes the environment to produce opportunities, but in reality, the only thing that changes the person's ability to notice the opportunities. I don't mean to minimize the advantage, because I have the ability to recognize opportunities is essential to success.
Well, maybe that's part of it, I said. But I've heard of some pretty amazing coincidences that happen for the people doing affirmations. One of my friends was writing affirmations to double his income, and he got a phone call out of the blue from a headhunter. 2 weeks later, he's in a new job at double his salary. How do you explain that?
It's all about job and status and position and money with this guy. It's seriously like what, looking into a time machine to the late 50s. Like some guy with a buzz cut who hits his kid every day and is just like, well, you're not going to get a good job at the paper mill if you don't act better.
I know. It's like that's the only thing that's on his mind is like new technologies and like misunderstanding them.
Yeah, I'm just imagining this guy with like a fucking flat top just like smacking the crap out of his buzz cut kid going, you're never going to get a job at the paper mill with your dad and everybody's going to think I'm a drunk. And he won't put his drink down while he's hitting him.
Your friend had a clear goal and was willing to make change in his life to accomplish it, he responded. His willingness to do affirmations was a good predictor of his success, not necessarily a cause of it. That headhunter in your example increased the pay of many people that month. Your friend was one of them. People who do affirmations will have the sensation that they are causing the environment to conform to their will. This is an immensely enjoyable feeling because the illusion of control is one of the best illusions you can have, he continued. Another way to look at affirmations is as a communications channel between your conscious and subconscious mind. Oh boy. Your subconscious is often better than your rational mind at predicting your future. If your subconscious allows you to write, I will be a famous ballerina 15 times a day for a year, it's telling you something. Your subconscious is saying that it likes your odds, that it will allow you to make the sacrifices, that it will give you the satisfaction that you need to weather the hard work ahead. On the other hand, if you try writing your affirmation for a few days and find it too bothersome, your subconscious is giving you a clear message that it doesn't like your odds.
That's it! I'm gonna bash the door down with my secret mind powers. Back up, Tim Tom! You don't have secret powers. That's because they're secret, maybe even to me. But I have a key to the door. Oh, whatever. It's just, now we'll never know if I have secret mind powers.
I don't think my subconscious would be better than my conscious mind at predicting my future. I thought the subconscious was irrational, I said.
The subconscious is an odds-calculating machine. That's what it does naturally, though not always to good effect. If your subconscious notices that you lost money on your last three business dealings with people who wear hats, you'll never trust people in hats again!
It's the hats. That's what burned
me. That was
me.
The problem. It was just the hats.
So let me tell you about my views on black people again. No, okay. Come
on. Because let's not forget that this dude is a racist who's advocating for segregation a couple weeks ago. Anyway.
Well, that's what started all of this.
Oh, yeah. Your subconscious isn't always right. It depends on the quality of the information you feed into its odds-calculating engine. Luckily, the topic your subconscious knows best is you, because it has known you since you were in the womb. If your subconscious allows you to spend 10 minutes out of every busy day writing, I will double my income. Your subconscious likes your odds, and it is qualified to make that prediction.
Couldn't information be more than that? I asked.
Dude, your subconscious told you that you were black.
No, I think he made a very conscious effort to say that.
Yeah, he probably did.
He made a big deal about saying things that aren't exactly what they seem. But who's to say that concentrating on our goals doesn't change probability?
Go on, he said.
Okay, imagine you're a sea captain, but you're blind and deaf. You shout orders to your crew, but you don't know for sure if they heard the orders or obeyed them. All you know is that when you give an order to sail to a particular warm port, within a few days you are someplace warm. You can never be sure if your crew obeyed you or took you to some other warm place, or if you went nowhere and the weather improved.
Okay, I was going to say, number one, it's completely irrelevant as long as the boat's managing to pull in a profit and everything. Number two, you haven't been dashed to death on rocks, so clearly they're listening. Three, you shouldn't be a captain if you're blind and deaf.
Four, he's got two maps. One of them was made by a guy who made a blue map, and one of them was made by a guy who made a green map.
I know. It says we're in Italy. Right now!
First sugar.
Yeah. Well, he has two maps, one that only tells lies and one that only tells truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and then, yeah. I mean, God, that's the thing. Like, this whole thing is just, it's all so outrageous to me.
Imagine there's a trolley.
Yeah, this whole book has just been the trolley problem. Obnoxious thought.
At the very end of it, the trolley says, you know, we could have stopped at any time. I just thought you liked doing this.
I still say that the trolley just won't stop going. It's going to crash into the station, and it wants us to confuse it with a riddle. And the only way to stop it is for one of us to tell it a bunch of dead baby jokes until it just, like, breaks.
The question is, however, were you hired to work on the trolley? See, this is an example of capital.
I don't know any German scientists.
Yeah, I know. That dude from Godzilla. I don't know any German scientists.
If, as you say, our minds are delusion generators, then we're all like blind and deaf sea captains shouting orders into the universe and hoping it makes a difference.
I've been playing jazz for 30 years, and I just can't make a go of it. I want you to have my saxophone.
This isn't a saxophone. It's an umbrella.
So I've been playing an umbrella for 30 years? Why didn't anybody tell me?
We all thought it was funny.
That's not funny.
We have no way of knowing what really works and what merely seems to work. So it doesn't make sense to try all the things that appear to work even if we can't be sure.
You have potential, he said.
I didn't know what that meant. Also, like the sea captain, if you go to like a port and then you get like, you know, like fresh like food from Seattle, you're in Seattle.
I still like this crew listening to a blind captain, even though it's like, Captain, we're going to sail into the rocks. He can't hear you.
Chapter 27, Fifth Level.
Cool. We're going to the fifth level?
So he's going to advise us all to, like, poison ourselves at the end, right?
I actually got a text from the Supreme Overlord Master, and that's Rex's master.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit is right, you guys. He's the big guy. He sits right at the tippy-tippy top, and he made it very, very clear to me that all of you are going to need to commit suicide.
Tits! I knew it! The final circle.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's where this is heading.
Nice.
Because we're talking about the probability and, like, we gotta play the odds sometimes for great things to happen. And if you're
genetic- the comet only comes around once every- No.
Yeah, and if you're genetically superior, you got really good odds.
Who are you? I asked. I didn't know how to phrase the question politely. The old man certainly wasn't normal.
I am an avatar.
Is that some sort of title? I thought it was your name.
It's both.
Excuse me for asking this. I don't really know how to phrase it, so I'm just going to come out and say it.
You want to know if I'm human?
Yeah, I apologize if that sounds crazy. It's just that. The old man waved off the end of my sentence.
I understand. Yes, I am human. I'm a fifth level human. An avatar.
Fifth level?
People exist at different levels of awareness. An avatar is one who lives at the fifth level.
We all have a level 3 clearance here, correct?
No. I'm still at level 2.
Roger. Level 3.
Cool. This is fucking crazy. Yeah, wait. Please tell me he goes into the other 4 levels.
Oh, I think he does.
And I need to know more about this cult now.
Is awareness like intelligence? I asked.
No. Intelligence is a measure of how well you function within your level of awareness. Your intelligence will say about the same over your life. Awareness is entirely different from intelligence. Awareness involves recognizing your delusions for what they are. Most people's awareness will advance 1 or 2 levels in their lifetime.
What does it mean to recognize your delusions?
When you were a child, did your parents tell you that Santa Claus brought Christmas presents? Brought presents on Christmas Day?
Yeah, I said. I believed in Santa until kindergarten, when all the other kids started talking. Then I realized Santa couldn't get to all those homes in one night.
Your intelligence did not change at the moment you realized that Santa Claus was a harmless fantasy. Your math and verbal skills stayed the same, but your awareness increased. You were suddenly aware that stories from credible sources, in this case your parents, could be completely made up. And from this moment of that realization, you can never see the world the same way because your awareness of reality changed.
So, Scott Adams doesn't believe that anybody's math and verbal skills increase from the time they're 5?
I guess I
well, his clearly didn't.
I guess I didn't even notice it.
No, thank you for pointing that out, Millie. That's amazing.
I think he thinks of that as something innate that never improves.
Also, what happened to all things are possible? And if they're possible, then they happen.
Well, first of all God, all things are possible, so jot that down.
But that was the terms he set down for this universe.
Oh, yeah.
Through probability, all things are happening. So at some point, there is a Santa Claus going to every kid's house.
You're
those are the terms of... Those are the rules of this universe he has proposed.
This society was your idea.
I guess it did.
And in school, did you learn that the Native Americans and the Pilgrims got together to celebrate what became Thanksgiving in the United States?
Yeah.
You figured it must be true because it was written in a book, and because your teacher said that it happened. You were in school for the specific purpose of learning truth, but it was reasonable to believe you were getting it. But scholars now tell us that the first Thanksgiving with pilgrims and Native Americans never happened. Like Santa Claus, much of what we regard in history is simply made up.
Well, yeah, I could have told you that.
Yeah, that's a really weirdly complicated thing that he way oversimplified.
Yeah,
yeah, it wasn't as rosy. It was like a, you know, I mean, we have a whole episode on Tisquanto, honestly, because he's fascinating.
But. Yeah, like, I mean, honestly, but even the way he described it, like, well, it turns out everything in history is mostly bullshit, and we're just finding that out now. And it's like, no, for a long time, we thought that Troy was a myth.
Yeah.
We thought it was fake, and then we found it in Turkey, and it was like, oh, shit, Troy is real.
The thing is that, like, if you go to, like, Asia, they had a lot better record keeping, so their history is, like, a lot more intact. But when you look at, like, Western Europe, there was, like, a whole 400-year period where people didn't know how to write anymore.
Oh, yeah, from, like, the 500s to the 900s, about.
Yeah, so there was a lot of shit that did get lost.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there's famous example of, there's a document called I think it's called, like, the Pelt document, and it has a bunch of different, like, kings drawn with a bunch of pelts, and nobody knows really what it was for.
Yeah.
People think it's, like, a tribute pelt.
And then there's also the fact that it doesn't matter at what time or place in history you were at, there are always going to be lazy people who don't do their fucking jobs. And that was real popular in archaeology for quite a while, to just make shit up.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm not going to bother learning how to decipher this thing.
Well, we're going to learn about learning.
Yeah, so I'm just saying he's not entirely wrong, but it's an oversimplified take on it.
Well, it's like explaining this to a 13-year-old.
Let's see if it clears it up a little here. In your examples, there's always learning. That seems like intelligence to me, not awareness.
Awareness is about unlearning. It is recognition that you don't know as much as you thought you knew.
He described what he called the five levels of awareness and said that all humans experience the first level of awareness at birth. That's when you become aware that you exist. In the second level of awareness, you understand that other people exist. You believe most of what you're told by authority figures. You accept the belief system which you are raised. At the third level of awareness, you recognize that humans are often wrong about the things they believe. You feel that you might be wrong about some of your own beliefs, but you don't know which ones. Despite your doubts, you still found comfort in your beliefs. The fourth level is skepticism. You believe the scientific method is the best measure of what is true, and you believe you have a good working grasp of truth, thanks to science, your logic, and your senses. You're arrogant when it comes to dealing with people in levels 2 and 3. The fifth level of awareness is the avatar. The avatar understands that the mind is an illusion generator, not a window to reality. The avatar recognizes science as a belief system, albeit a useful one. An avatar is aware of God's power, as expressed in probability and the inevitable recombination of God consciousness. I think I'm a fourth level, I said, at least according to you.
Yes, you are a fourth,
he confirmed.
Oh, God.
But now that you've told me all your secrets on the fifth level, maybe I get bumped up a level. Is that how it works?
No, he said. You need to pay. No, it's okay. Awareness does not come from receiving new information. It comes from rejecting old information. You still cling to your fourth level delusions.
I feel vaguely insulted, I joked.
Okay. So it sounds like he was trying to start a cult. But he's so obnoxious and impersonable that he realized that nobody would ever join his cult.
I mean, do you think that was before or after he destroyed every personal relationship he had?
I think he wanted...
During. During.
I think he wanted a Bernard Nipperdaling moment where somebody in his comment section would be like, Adams, do you think you're a fifth level? And he would be like, well, what do you think, my child? And be like, well, I say that you are.
No, I'm thinking that he thought he was L. Ron Hubbard.
But he just couldn't quite hack it.
He just couldn't quite hack it. Because somehow he managed to be more obnoxious and impersonable than L. Ron Hubbard.
You shouldn't. There's no implied good or bad about one level of awareness. No level is better or worse than any other level. People enjoy happiness at every level, and they contribute to society at every level.
That sounds very charitable, I said. But I notice your level has the highest number. That's obviously a good one. You notice you're feeling a little bit smug. There's no good or bad in anything, just differences in usefulness. People at all levels have the same potential for being useful.
Yeah.
If this dude's a level 4, like, this is a pretty shitty scale.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I mean, but the thing is, the guy's also questioning an OT3. So that's kind of the problem there, too.
That is the problem. You can't question OT3.
What he has to do his OT20 voice and be like, hey, everybody, I command you in my voice.
But you it's know, just like...
Anyway. Yeah.
Fucking... The guy, I don't know if he ever had a name, and I don't care at this point. He's like a real piece of shit.
Like, and the old man's just as bad.
It's like just as bad, but he knows how to dress it up a little bit better.
Oh, you mean he wears a mask of sanity?
No, actually, he sounds more insane at points, but he's just not like outright like. People don't matter.
Well, people do matter.
Yeah. Like, he's not as outright about it. But it's like, again, what kind of fucking scale is this if this dude's a level 4 and he's this big of a piece of shit? Anyways, continue, Sophie. There was a reason we thought he was a serial killer in the first episode of this.
People at all levels have the same potential for being useful. But you have to feel glad you're not one of the other levels. No, happiness comes more easily at the other levels. Awareness has its price. An avatar can hide happiness only in serving. How do you serve? Sometimes society's delusions get out of balance, and when they conflict, emotions flame out of control. People die. If enough people die, God's recombination is jeopardized. When that happens, the avatar steps in. How? You can't wake yourself up from a dream. Yes, you can. You need someone who is already awake to shake you gently, to whisper in your ear. In that sense, that is what I do. As usual, I'm not sure what you mean. He explained. The great leaders in this world are always the least rational among us. They exist at the second level of awareness. Charismatic leaders have a natural ability to bring people into their delusion. They convince people to act against self-interest and pursue the leader's visions of the greater good. Leaders make citizens go to war to seize land they will never live on and to kill people who have different religions. Not all leaders are irrational, I argued. The most effective ones are. You don't often see math geniuses or logic professors become great leaders. Logic is a detriment to logic professors. Logic is a detriment to
What's
leadership.
What's a logic professor?
They only teach logic. No other branch of philosophy or math.
Yeah, only logic.
Like bird law?
Exactly. You have to go to very specific schools to find a logic professor.
Well, irrational leadership must work. The world seems to be chugging along fairly well overall. Dude, you wrote this in 2001. Anyway. It works because people's delusions are, on average, in balance. Although maybe, anyway. The avatar keeps it so by occasionally introducing new ideas when needed. Do you think an idea can change the world that much? I asked. Ideas are the only things that can change the world. The rest is details. All right.
Is that how he ends the book?
Last chapter.
Oh, thank God. I was going to be really upset if that's how he ended the book. But I feel like the ending's going to be just as bad.
Okay, so he's going to be in a Jeep, and this little Mexican kid's going to take a picture of him and charge him $5 and say that, like, if he doesn't pay for it, his dad's going to beat him. And then the guy's going to go, he said a storm's coming. And Scott Adams is going to be like, I know. And he's going to drive into the storm.
All right, ready?
No, but let's...
Let's do it anyway.
Yep, let's finish it.
Chapter 28, Going Home.
Dun 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 dun. Do do do
do. Sorry. I want to go home.
Yeah, daylight come. Time and need dissolved in the old man's presence. We talked for what could have been several days. I remember one sunrise, but there might have been more. I never felt tired in his presence. It was as if his energy surrounded him like an invisible field, feeding everything that was near. He was amazing and confounding and, ultimately, beyond the realm of words.
That sounds like the math.
There's more where that came from. Oh, no.
Yeah, all you gotta do is just keep doing that thing you've been doing with your mouth. And like,
I'll keep doing the thing I'm doing with my mouth and math.
I'm pretty happy we met on Grindr.
You don't have to keep telling me you're a package delivery man. It was became anyway.
Yeah, but my wife's gonna be home in a couple days, so
we gotta wrap this up.
Just smoke the rest of the marathon. Okay, we'll get an apartment. No. We talked more about life and energy and profit. We talked more about life and energy and probability. At times, I lost the sense of belonging to my own body. It was as if my consciousness expanded to include items in the room. I stared at my hand as it rested on the arm of the rocking chair and watched the distinctions between wood and air and hand disappeared. At times, I felt like a kitten lifted by the fold of skin on the back of my neck, helpless, safe, transported. I don't remember leaving his house or walking to my van. This is meth. But I do remember how everything looked. The city had bright edges. Sound was crisp. Colors were vivid. This is meth.
I won't stop clenching my teeth because it felt really good.
Objects seemed more dimensional, as if I could see the sides and backs from any angle. I heard a phone call being made a block away and knew both sides of the conversation. I could feel every variation in airflow.
I couldn't stop picking at my face.
I drove home by a route I wouldn't normally take. I glided between green lights without ever touching my brakes. Pedestrians stayed on sidewalks, and a policeman waved me around an accident scene. I knew that all the people involved were safe. As my key entered the lock, I could see that the other locks like mine and the other keys that were coincidentally the same. I could see the internal mechanism of the lock as it turned, as though I were a tiny observer inside, looking at industrial-sized equipment. Everything in my apartment seemed three-quarters of its original size. It was mildly claustrophobic. I sat down at my kitchen table with a package that the avatar refused to accept. I stared at it for a while, wondering about its contents. I wanted to open it, but didn't want to spoil a perfect mood. In time, however, curiosity won. A folded yellow note tumbled out of the box and onto my lap. I unfolded it and read its barely legible message. It was just one sentence, but there was so much in the sentence that I found myself reading it over and over.
Please, for the love of God, let it be. Never gonna give you up. Never gonna let you down.
I stayed up all that night, wrapped in the red plaid blanket that was also in the package.
Yeah, he smoked meth with an old man he had sex with, and like, now he can't sleep.
Reading the sentence, there's only one avatar at a time.
Oh my God!
He's the avatar now!
Oh my God, the rule of two!
And he has the blanket now.
It's not the force! God damn it!
Okay.
It's not the force!
Well, no, here's what happened. Here's what happened. It's 2001.
Episode 1 had just come out, and Scott Adams is trying to figure out what he's going to do with his life.
Kind of. But no. I was going to say, the timeline of the book, here's what actually happened, is this dude who was a serial killer, he answered an ad in the paper about a dude whose wife was going out of town. He was planning to go murder this guy, but when he got there, the meth and the sex was just so goddamn good that he decided he just could let him go.
Also, bonus chapter from his next book. It's only one page.
Oh boy.
It's from the Religion War.
But then he did ultimately kill the old man and take the blanket as a souvenir.
God.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That's better than this book.
Because there can only be one avatar, and now he has the bag of meth and the blanket.
After the war. I love that rocking chair, the young man said to me. How old is that thing? It looks like an antique. I got it 1 year before the religion war, I said. I'm glad the war ended before I was born, the young man sighed. Can't imagine what it was like to be alive then. You were lucky to have missed it. Were you in that war? Everyone was in that war.
The religion war?
Yeah. Let me ask you something, he said. Why do you think the war ended? We learned in school that everyone just stopped fighting. No one knows why. Although there are all sorts of theories about secret pacts among world leaders, no one really knows. You were there. Why do you think everyone suddenly stopped fighting?
Because it was stupid.
Put another log in the fire and I'll tell you. The young man looked at his watch and hesitated. He had many more stops before lunch. Then he turned toward the fireplace and chose a sturdy log. If you flip a coin, I said, how often does it come up heads?
It's the same goddamn book! He just wrote the same book again!
Well, except this time he's 6'4" and...
Red Hawthorne.
Yeah.
The other book actually doesn't focus on the old dude. He has a principal role at the very end of it. But oh my God. What do y'all think about the experience? How is recording this?
There horrible. Is clearly no God because we had to listen to that book.
Like, I don't normally find myself to be a disagreeable person, like in the way that I want to disagree with every single thing a person says.
Oh, yeah, but this, like...
I couldn't help... Like, every single thing I had a fucking problem with. It was awful. Every moment of that. I don't know why we did this, other than Scott Adams is a fucking asshole.
And then we were stubborn.
And we were stubborn and just drank and fought our way through it.
Any last words? Yeah, I agree. It was awful. You hear my voice.
I hate Scott Adams. Those are my last words on this. I hate Scott Adams. I hate him so much.
Also, here's my final thoughts. Scott Adams clearly doesn't understand empathy or, like, remorse or...
He won't love you, you know. He's incapable of love.
I think he understands the concept of regret, but only because he's lost things he's cared about.
Oh, yeah.
The dude views human beings as commodities, it seems like.
He views everything as a commodity. He views time as, itself as a commodity.
Like, every single thing is a transactional affair with him.
Oh, yeah.
This isn't how you should live your life.
Nope.
Like, do the exact opposite of what this book was telling you, and I think you'll be way happier.
Or else you'll find yourself advocating for segregation on your stream.
Yeah.
And telling people that you were a black man until you realized that segregation was the way to go.
And yeah. I mean, again, by the end of this, I'm thoroughly convinced that Scott Adams does not have anybody who is close enough to care to help him. But the man needs help, clearly.
Yeah, he absolutely clearly needs fucking help. Like, there's no other way of describing it.
Yeah. Like,
it's alarming, honestly. It was fun doing it, but just looking back, like, it's genuinely kind of alarming that this person
exists
and was followed by so many people, and like that he actually tapped into something that the culture was hungering for.
Like, and we joked around a lot about how fucked up he must be, but, like, I'm kind of convinced that he could have been a serial killer had he not been successful with Dilbert.
Oh, yeah, or, like, a bank dude who
definitely.
Just... Yeah.
Or, like, a sex criminal.
Yeah, or a sex criminal, or, like, yeah, like, a landlord. A loan shark.
Well, I know in one of his books he says that.
No, he's not intimidating enough to be a loan shark.
Not at all.
No.
Well, whatever life he'd be a piece of shit.
Yes, that's ultimately what I'm getting at, is that I think Scott Adams is a broken human being.
Good night, everyone.
It's over. It's finally over.
Can we go home now?
We can go home.